In every generation, there is a virgin. He alone will watch the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness for the first time at least once a week. I am a Buffy virgin. Okay, so welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. I'm Michael Poli. I'm the Buffy virgin. I've never seen Buffy, and here I am. We're now watching season 2, episode 4, and with me today is Dennis St. John, a horror comic cartoonist, DennisComics.com, comics with an X.
Hey, y'all. Hey, gang.
John Landis. Oh, John.
That's me. Hi. You can say my name.
No.
I'm not incognito.
No, I'll... we were to do first names only. That was the thing that Travis was going to
say. Oh, whatever.
I just said do regular names. Just do regular names.
Yeah. So I'm Michael. John is on the podcast.
Hey.
I'm Travis. Hi, everyone. It's good to be back.
So we have a new format. I'm going to stop saying it's a new format. Hey, welcome to the show.
We're four episodes into a new format.
It's not new anymore.
It's a format war. I've been recording this all on HD format.
Betamax.
Blu-ray format.
So the way this show works is we're going to play a summary that was pre-recorded and written by Travis and as read by John. And everyone will get up to speed on what happened in this episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then we will talk about it. We'll talk about weird noticings, trivia, love questions for the group and themes. Then there'll be some predictions by myself, the Virgin. I don't know what's going to happen next. So it's always going to be a surprise if you've seen the show. It's probably fun to take a gamble on this. We should probably get some odds going. John actually made this really cool graph that's up on the website now, buffyvirgin.com. If you go check it out, there's a predictions section on the website now where you can see live these predictions happening or not happening. Dennis will do a kill count. There'll be some recommendations. And this week, we're going to discuss the state of this podcast and what we should do next. So let's listen to this intro.
Inca Mummy Girl. We learn in this episode that although being the Chosen One in Sunnydale kind of sucks, being the Chosen One 500 years ago was worse. Like, a lot worse. And also, we learn not to be excited for anything in Sunnydale because you will likely become a victim of whatever you were excited about. This episode opens with a field trip to the Sunnydale Museum, with the gang talking about the student exchange program. Xander doesn't want to participate because he comes from a broken home, but Buffy is going to be hosteling a student for the next 2 weeks, we find out. Cordelia has been salivating about her Swedish mail order boy. Maybe he's going to set her up a new dresser. Buffy chose the guy-like student, showing more disinterest than anything unsavory, and Xander immediately becomes jealous and controlling. Well, I hope nothing bad happens to him in this episode. In the museum's mummy exhibit, we see poor, misunderstood Rodney, who's going to be the first victim for this episode. He's growling and baring his beautiful metal teeth at the camera. It is tough to feel sympathy for a guy who thinks there are 14 elements in the periodic table. Honestly, I'm surprised he managed to make it all the way to season 2 without dying. So his comeuppance is quick and on camera. He smashes the seal and is immediately mummified by the villain of the episode with a deadly kiss. And that, Dr. Jones, is how they say goodbye in Peru. That evening at the train station, we meet our second victim, the real, and male, Ampata. Boy Ampata doesn't get a funeral. Just a Peruvian kiss and he's stuffed in his own luggage. So, when our fearless Scooby gang shows up to pick up Boy Ampata, they end up adopting the beautiful Girl Ampata, and Xander is immediately smitten with her. Girl Ampata lies to the Scooby gang about being a mummy, and they in turn lie to her about being a vampire slang gang. Giles and Buffy do their research and ultimately figure out that Girl Ampata is the mummy who has come back to life, and Boy Ampata is the skeleton in a box at Buffy's house. Everything comes to a head at Sunnydale's ill-advised dress-up-as-someone-else's-culture dance. Cordelia's Swede is not the hunk of man-boy she originally thought. The cha-ching guy notices Willow. And Xander is almost mummified by Girl Ampata. Buffy and Willow find poor, semi-conscious Xander on the floor of the bronze and whisk him off his feet and race back to the museum for the obligatory confrontational scene with Mummy Dearest. Girl Ampata is almost able to take Xander's life, but at the last moment turns back into her old girl mummy self and is ungracefully dismembered and left to fall on the floor. Well, that's life on the Hellmouth. Who's ready for the next field trip? Will Giles buy a new car next episode? Keep on listening with the Buffy Virgin Podcast.
Great stuff. Good job, John.
Well, you wrote most of it. I did some shuffling there. Sorry.
There was some editing. There were all my jokes were edited out.
Well, I thought they would.
You had this whole thing where you would say like something, something, something last episode, and it was hilarious, and it was insane. But whatever, the plaque I got across.
I took out everything where you were speaking in first person.
That's how I speak. So where do we get started with this episode? I feel like, just to start, I know we've got weird musings and shit, but like this episode feels like the Buffy episode that this show is all about, which is like, it's the gang, it's trying to solve a mystery, it's like the stakes seem relatively low. It feels really fun. Versus the episode with Spike, I think had a lot more weight and stakes. This feels like super low stakes.
Stakes. There's no vampires.
Extremely low stakes, you're right.
Super low fences.
Super low stakes fun in the Buffy universe. This is a fun episode. There probably won't be many of these. But anyway.
Is that a prediction?
prediction is that we'll look back fondly on episodes like this that feel naive and fun when this show becomes really cynical and matures in the way that makes it a show that you guys all like. Because I know that you all enjoy this show, and rewatching this stuff, you're like, oh, they were so naive. Like the way so you muse about the past. This show, it's like clearly dark days are ahead as this show matures.
I think you're better at watching us than watching Buffy, Mike.
Yeah. Buffy, oh, by the way, Mike, somebody tagged you on Facebook on a Buffy animated video that was like chock full of spoilers.
I saw that too.
Don't watch that video. Probably watched it, but like just from the very first second, it's like it's just wrapped in season 7 spoilers.
Oh, nice. The internet's targeting you, Mike. This podcast is finally getting off the ground. You're becoming a target. I was his manager, and now I'm not. I'm not managing anyone.
So he's sticking it to his old boss. He's like, that guy's doing this virgin. I know what to do for that. Sticking it to the man.
You can't be a virgin after I fuck you.
Yeah, maybe that's what he's doing. Anyway, I didn't fall for it, guys. Don't worry. I didn't watch the video he posted on my wall. There's a lot of observations here in the weird noticings, John. I would love to hear how you want to talk about these things. You said Xander's racist. That was the first comment.
I can't remember what the exact moment was. I was actually just looking at that. I'm like, crap, I can't remember exactly what Xander
said. Well, he does a lot of racist stuff this episode. He's like, talks about when he finds out Impot is a man, he's like, oh, those Latin lovers.
That's right.
And he repeatedly goes like, ay caramba, and like, Chihuahua, and like nonsense shit like that. Yeah, I want to talk about this museum, the Sunnydale Museum, and how big Sunnydale has to be to have an amazing museum with dinosaurs in it, but also how poor they are that they can't put a mummy under glass or like any of the things that
got to be trapped under a seal. I mean, at least they had the seal.
I just say, I've seen mummies in museums. They're under glass. I've never had the opportunity to touch a mummy.
I feel like Sunnydale is like the way it's depicted is like Cincinnati, Ohio. It's got all these major things. I wouldn't be shocked if there was a theme park at some point in this area. By the way, prediction, there will be an episode in the theme park.
Oops. Hello, podcast. You have to, listeners, you have to go to Cincinnati, Ohio to understand this reference. I think it's like a St. Louis, or no, it's too small to be St. Louis.
Cincinnati.
Well, it's got all of this. I think Mike's right. It's got like it's like attractions of a larger city, but it's supposed to be like 30,000 people.
Yeah, but no major sports teams, right? Which is important because sports, if there's any sports teams in the show, the list, I mean, everyone who's watching is going to go away. Like they know that.
Yeah. That things happen. I think John, the exact reference to this racist comment is Buffy asked Xander if he ever did the foreign exchange student hosting, and he said, my dad tried to sell me to some Armenians once. Does that count?
Oh, I don't remember that, but sure.
Yeah. Is that racist against Armenians?
I think it's uncouth. I don't know. I don't think
it implies that Armenians buy people. I mean, it's like when my parents... My parents used to tell me if I wasn't good, they'd sell me to the gypsies, which is not a nice...
Everybody knows it's just the Saudis, right? I mean, it wouldn't even be the Armenians. Come on.
Yeah, the Armenians don't have that kind of money to buy white boys. I don't know. Sorry. That's racist.
Oh, my God.
I just don't understand the comment, I guess. I'm trying to figure it out. That's
so all. Let's talk about this museum. This museum is a little bit too big and too nice to be a real museum for this small town. And it also, I don't know how they get there. I guess they just walk because everybody walks places.
They said they took a bus.
A bus.
Okay.
Although I don't think there's usually, I don't think there's a lot of busing in the Sunnydale district, right?
Just for field trips.
Yeah.
Did we all bus to museums in school? Is that a thing?
I would take in middle school and stuff. I remember
not taking in high the school. Bus.
Yeah,
well, that high school trip to the museum. These kids well, all our, have cars and shit. There's no reason.
Our high school was weird because
we had SUVs.
Yeah, we had SUVs. The school had a fleet of Suburbans. Remember, like that's the kind of place we come from.
But normal places rent buses. When I was at a different school, we would take a school bus on a field trip.
No,
that's very so
I would do that in middle school and elementary school. I don't remember taking a field trip.
No one takes field trips in high school. Middle school field trips, like that's it. That's the end. And it's like cultural shit because, hey, maybe you have shitty parents that would never take you to the museum. We're going to ensure that you've been to one at least one time. And so you understand what that is culturally. Like in high school, the cultural stuff is like exchange shit where it's like, cool, let's go to Tokyo. Let's go to Germany. Let's go to France. It's like much bigger. I think the authors or the writers' depictions of high school, like this is all middle school, like basically, the way that they think about events and how important dances are and stuff like that. Anyway, that's the whole museum bit for me. Like it's like no one's going to go to a museum like this. Like even if we were learning about Peru in school and there was a Peruvian exhibit, they would never drag the class. That would be such an expense and a pain in the ass. Anyway, the end.
I don't know. Yeah, good detail. I hadn't thought about that. But I did think about the lack of glass. That kid could have been saved if there was just some glass over that mummy.
That kid's days were numbered, man. That's all I had.
Yeah. I like a guy who growls as an adult. And like,
I was trying to say, is he a better or worse actor than Jaws? And I got to come down on the side of, he's a worse actor than Jaws because at least Jaws was in a couple of movies. Hey.
Yeah. Well, and also Jaws is physically intimidating enough. Yeah. This kid doesn't, when they say like he beat up Xander every day for 5 years, I was like, was that before Xander had like a massive growth spurt? Like
before Xander was a 22-year-old cast, you know, going to high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actor, he played minor league baseball in real life, right?
Oh, yeah.
Xander did, yeah.
Xander, yeah. Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
We haven't yet talked about Nicky Brendon, but...
Is this the time to drop some Nick Brendon knowledge? Because, I mean, we know a lot about David Boreanaz. Like, he was discovered dog in Hollywood, but, like...
His dad was a weatherman.
Was there a...
Nicholas Brendon has a natural stutter.
But was that's Nicholas, true. Was Nicholas Brendon discovered in the minor league? Was that how he got his start in acting?
He blew out his shoulder, right? That's what the story is. Or like he got injured and he couldn't take it to the next level.
But he was
so handsome. His twin brother was on an episode of Saved by the Bell.
And an episode of Buffy.
Wait, he has a twin?
Oh,
hey, literal prediction. Identical twin. There will be a twins episode.
That doesn't count.
I already told you it would be one. I don't know. I'm less hung up about this whole museum thing.
Right. I would just like to say that Cincinnati's museum is excellent. Cincinnati's Natural History Museum is an excellent history museum.
It's like one of the best museums in the country.
That's why I said Cincinnati.
Anyway, okay.
I'm not clueless. Anyway,
the mummy also looks really great. That's A+ physical effects for a TV show.
Mummy looks really great in the last scene. But the first scene you see the mummy, it has this plate it's holding. And the loser kid with, you know, braces and a brain problem grabs it. And that's like this trigger for this mummy. I don't know how many times the mummy's been awakened, but this is the only time as far as it matters to us. And it's so crazy that it's basically instantly awakened. And you know, when you see like mummies get stripped of all their shit, right? Like when you see a mummy, it's because, yeah, there's no valuables and who cares about a corpse? Like you don't actually steal the skeleton when you grave rob. You take all the rubies and jewels and shit around it. So it is suspicious that there's a plate, but there wouldn't be a plate. The plate is there because it's got to be a part of the exhibit somehow. So that's the trigger is insane.
No. I think whoever would, we're not clear that this grave got robbed, but presumably the grave robbers would read the plate and be like, honestly, I wouldn't take anything that a mummy was clutching. I mean, that's like grave robbing 101.
I don't know. I think one of the like things I like to read about is how like the English, when they were robbing mummy graves, would like really desecrate the mummies. They would be like, it was popular for rich British people to like eat mummies for a while. Like,
yeah, they had like mummy parties, right?
In like, yeah.
The
Victorian era. It was they like, have like an unwrapping.
Yeah, it was an like, unwrapping. You'd be like, have a mummy at your cocktail party. You'd be like, oh, we'll take it apart.
Well, so, I mean, that's Egyptian mummies, different from Inca mummies, but like, I don't think there's any line that people won't cross with a mummy. So what I think you're totally right. That would have been broken like so long ago.
What amazing archaeological decadence. I would love for that's a great subject for a short horror short story or something like that.
Oh, totally. Amazing. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that image.
I think most mummy movies don't do that. They like focus on like finding a new mummy or something. Like that'd be great to set something in the Victorian era with somebody just like them just party at a party tearing a mummy apart. Right?
No, it would be in the UK and would be like completely fetishization of Egyptian culture and some racist depictions of Egyptians from white people. They're playing whatever the ancient Victorian version is of Walk Like an Egyptian, and then they bring out the fucking mummy and they unwrap it, and all these women are like, oh, you know, and they're like all laughing, and then there's nudity, it'd be on HBO, and you know, some sex that's not related, and then that's when the mummy would stalk these drunk people at the party. Yeah, it'd be great. Oh, and they'd be using opium and drugs and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would give them all a mummy disease from eating the mummy, and they all become mummies slowly. and the one person has to find a cure.
So if you have a mummy disease, do you just wake up with bandages on your...
I don't know, your organs fall out or something. Eventually your brain drops out your nose.
Anyway, I'm shocked. The kid takes the plate. The mummy immediately grabs the kid. Fade to black or cut. You know, that's the cold open.
Oh, like, also, I rewatched it and I noticed like when they talk, they give like expository information in front of the mummy, and it cuts to shots of the mummy like as if it's listening. So the setup later for that, Ampata knows a lot of stuff because she's been listening, is totally set up visually. Because without that, those would be weird shots of like, why are they cutting to the mummy while they're talking about picking up a guy at a bus station?
It's because the mummy knows. So I guess I have the next observation here. And I was saying that Oz, I guess Oz is the Seth Green character, the Rally's commercial character, is totally a Xander clone. Yep. As soon as you meet,
well, we don't know enough yet. I would disagree, but I know more about Oz.
Oh, okay,
Oz can't be a Xander clone. A, he's chill. B, he's not trying to like be horn dog.
I don't know. He's kind of a horn dog in this episode, but just in the
like infatuation,
just in love at first sight. Just amazing the amazing acting of Seth Green.
Who is that girl?
The worst part is like is that creepy Devin guy, and just like the way he talks, it's like insane. Like it just like gets under my skin, and I go crazy when I hear that.
So why did they need another Xander character? I know you guys are all like, oh, they're different. Okay, but so
in that they're both like mad, they're
very different personalities.
Okay, well they're both okay. So clearly, what's going to happen here is Oz likes Willow, Xander doesn't like Willow because he is secure in knowing that Willow likes him and doesn't need to do anything. But when Oz starts to like Willow, that's going to be a problem for Xander. And that's stupid. But that is how that's totally what the setup for this thing is at this moment.
All right.
Which
addiction.
I'd say the more Xander like character is the other new character in this episode is Jonathan. Maybe it's spoilers to mention him, but
I didn't mention him. I didn't mention him on the summary because I was like, that's too much. I mean, I think, yeah, Jonathan.
I had forgotten that this was Oz's first episode, but I remembered very well that it was Jonathan's first episode.
He doesn't even have a line. I only know.
He has a line. Jonathan, he says, line. Aren't you with Xander? And he says, your hands are really rough. I should go.
I suddenly feel like I'm Jonathan in real life. Like, that was like, no one's I was asked this guy, Jonathan.
No, I feel more related. Background. I more relate to Jonathan than Xander.
Oh, yeah.
The shot where she's like, later in the episode, where she's like patrolling for someone to eat, and he's just sitting on the stairs alone. Like, I'm just observing. Yeah. Like,
well, that's why you have Jonathan. Jonathan is the Barkley of this show, right?
Barkley from Star Trek.
Oh, you can't do that to me. You buried this metaphor in another show, and I don't even know this character yet.
So, on Star Trek, everybody's perfect. I mean, not everybody's literally perfect, because like Worf is always like, "Have we tried violence? I think we should try violence." But like, they're all perfect in a way that is like, "Oh, well, their flaws are endearing," right? And the same is true of the Buffy cast. Like, they might not be literally perfect, but they're all nice in the way that their flaws are endearing. Jonathan is a character who actually has real flaws, and on Star Trek Connection, is Lieutenant Barkley, right? He's not like, oh, I'm flawed in a way that moves the story forward and, you know, allows us all to learn a lesson. Like, he's actually flawed. Like,
Has he's like, they're like, Barkley, get out of the holodeck. Yeah. Because you need to go to work.
Yeah. Exactly.
What? Who plays Barkley on the show? Is that?
It's the guy from, I can't remember his name. Is Dwight Schultz? Is that his name? Maybe. He's the guy from.
Wait, Dwight Schultz? No, wait, that's Dwight Schrute, from the 80s. Sorry.
The guy from the 80s.
You know what? It's frustrating to me because you guys are talking about a character that doesn't matter to the show of Star Trek at all. Like, literally, imagine you're a child and it's Christmas and you opened up your Star Trek action figure toy. You got action figures and it's like, oh, cool, I got Barkley. Like, no, I don't give a fuck about this character, right?
I would be excited.
I did when I was a Barkley action figure.
No, you want the commander. Barkley, you want the guy that runs the ship.
Here he is with some spiders that he's afraid of.
Yes. Yeah. No. I did not want a Barkley action figure when I was a kid, but I did really like Barkley when I was a kid. And I liked Jonathan for the same reason, which is that he's actually pathetic.
Oh my God. I just Googled what this Barkley person looks like.
It's the guy from the A-Team. It's the crazy guy from the A-Team is the actor.
Oh yeah. I didn't know that.
He seems like a good actor.
He is a really good actor.
That's awesome. That's awesome when you cast someone with like real flaws and they're actually a good actor. There's a really funny picture of him holding a cat.
That's really, I know what episode that's from.
Spot. He's a good kitty. To no one but you.
Oh, we're really off the rails now.
Okay, so the next observation, Travis, you have here is the biggest crime in this episode is the mom jeans.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you have another thing here about Xander. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, and Pato wears like mom jeans for part of this episode, and I just don't understand it.
I think she's wearing a boy and Pato's pants, and they're too large.
They don't fit like that. I mean, they still fit different, but they won't fit.
They're definitely women's jeans, but yeah, I think that was an actual look at the time, and I like.
And I just, it wasn't like, it just didn't quite work. It was a bit confusing. It was just weird. What was I going to say? Oh, Xander's like really cruel in this episode. That's my comment. It's just so strange. This is an episode all about language, right? All about communication.
And I think this episode's all about sacrifice.
It's a little bit of sacrifice, a little bit about language, right?
Wait, explain that. Why is it all about language?
Well, I mean, at core, there's a translation, right? Translating the seal, understanding. And misunderstanding what people say, right? That's like the fundamental problem of the seal for like 40 minutes until they figure it out, or 35 minutes. And then it's all about, you know, how do you tell your best friend, or, you know, this case Xander for Willow, that you don't like her in a way that's like acceptable, and isn't cruel. And then, you know, how do you tell someone else that you're a big scary mummy? I don't know. I was trying to figure out like what was the end game? Like, how many people did the mummy have to kill to stay human? Was it always going to be, I've got to kill someone every few days? Or is it like, do I have to just kill like five people and then I get to be human? That's what I could never figure out.
I don't think they ever spell it out.
They never spell it out. But I don't know. I think this episode's all about language, but I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely Xander's like, you know, connection to Mpata is not based on spoken language, right? It's based on his horn dog language.
The language of love.
Well, you know, communication, nonverbal and pheromones. And
so here's my question. How many times can Buffy play this same loop track of Xander getting a crush on a girl? Like, this has got to be the last time, right? Like, I know I have a prediction out there about Xander, you know, having sex with a monster eventually. Like, he has to lose his virginity at some point. That has to happen. But, like, how many times can this happen? It's just like, I feel like they've already done this story that they're doing in this episode.
Although,
and they call it out, which is great. They're like, "Hey, praying mantis, are you not a praying mantis?" They're just checking. But it's like, no, I'm worse. I'm a breath sucking mummy. You know.
Although, I think it's interesting that this has the markings of a Xander exploitation episode, but I would not define it as one, just because, like, in terms of screen time, it's not focused on Xander. Like,
that's true.
Willow and Buffy get as much like story arc as Xander in this.
But if Impata doesn't like Xander, then the mummy would just go on a rampage, and it doesn't, right? Like, mm-hmm. like it's totally about Xander, and he's.
Yeah, I'm just saying that everybody else has their stories that are as like equally important in this episode.
It's like Xander exploitation, you know, version 2. Thank God, in the sense like,
well, like a more understated.
Yeah, although we definitely get more. I mean, to spoil things in the future, there will be more Xander exploitation episodes.
Yeah,
like, this one's the show's like not done with it.
This is very story driven with a monster.
Yeah, and he's just a part of the story.
It's not classic season 2. This is like. Season 2, which is like, let's care about our characters and let's have a monster, and still there's still limitations from like of things being, you know, one and done or one and over or no consequences. Like there's still other issues, 100%, 110%. But
yeah. Presumably there's no long-term consequences of foreign exchange boy Impata just disappearing in Sunnydale.
What is Joyce gonna tell Joyce? Oh, Impata ran away.
Yeah.
I feel like Joyce is kind of like a little legally responsible for that Impata.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Also,
yeah, Joyce is nowhere in this episode.
Yeah, she's one scene. I mean, it's great. It's a great scene. You know, Joyce is just dynamite. But she's the only one who actually says Impata. She says Impata. Everyone else is saying Impata. Like it's a weird pronunciation difference. But she's the only one who actually says it like as it's written. If you go onto the Wikipedia page, it's written A-M-P-A-T-A. And she actually says Impata more clearly than anyone else who says Impata.
Yeah.
It's a bit strange. But I mean, it's dynamite because, you know, Kristen Sutherland is a great actress. So of course she's going to have the best delivery of it all. So
I like in the inner one scene, though, there's like a shot where she's not on the screen and Xander is like, be careful.
Oh, yeah.
And then like, you know, Joyce just walks back into frame and it's like, did she hear that? Was she like, what are you being careful of? Like,
yeah, mummy hunting? Are we going to talk about the lipstick errors in this episode? It's on the Wikipedia page if you want to.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, there's one lipstick error. There's two lipstick errors.
What constitutes a lipstick error? Is that when you use the wrong lipstick? Is that when the lipstick is on?
Yeah, continuity lipstick problem. So in
lipstick on and off. Got it.
No. In the show, Impata applies lipstick in the girls' bathroom where Xander can't go. And then the very next scene, she asks Buffy for lipstick. She doesn't have any.
Oh,
maybe this is part of her mummy's curse. Is she needs to constantly be reapplying lipstick because she absorbs it. Like she absorbs
very
life.
Dry, very dry lips. I'll tell you, mummies. They have very dry lips. That's like the one famous, like, there's a few famous, like, lips. There's some lipstick continuity issues. Like,
famous lipstick continuity issues.
Michael still hates the podcast.
That would be a great band name. I love it. That actually should be the other podcast name.
Yeah.
Call it.
Also, are we going to talk about how I was just like likening this poor Sven actor, Dolph Lundgren, who was cast in Hollywood as a Russian, even though he's Swedish. The poor Sven was cast as a Spaniard or by Cordelia, like only spoke to him in Spanish. It was super weird and super racist, super confusing. But I was like, man, it's tough to be a Swede. You're always going to get miscast. And then 20 years later, someone is going to cast a British man as a Swedish man, aka Daniel Craig and the girl with a dragon tattoo. So the Swedes, man, they get no love. Nobody knows who they are. That's all I got to say.
So the Joyce and Impata scene that doesn't happen, when we were watching the show, John, you were emphatic about that, right? That like clearly there's a scene missing.
Yeah. Well, because Buffy signs up for a foreign exchange student, goes and picks up the foreign exchange student, brings the foreign exchange student back to her house. And then later the foreign exchange student goes missing. And, you know, there's a scene with Joyce, but there's no scene where Joyce acknowledges the receipt of a human being into her house. Like, Buffy's obviously, I mean, she's a pretty responsible kid, but geez.
Joyce is busy starting over, John. She's working a new job. She's got a new gallery. You know, she's busy. You know,
I had a question about
then don't have a foreign
this situation. Ampata sleeps in Buffy's room.
Oh yeah,
like obviously that was set up. Like if that was boy Ampata, would he be sleeping in her room? That is some shady parenting to set that up.
I think that was like, that never made sense. Like there should have been a scene, obviously in a perfect world where like they move her stuff from a different room to Buffy's room, but that scene obviously isn't there.
No,
we can assume.
Well, we don't know really the architecture of Buffy's house.
No, we do. Well. It's online. Like, it's actually online.
I mean, within the show, we don't. It would be spoilers to talk about extra rooms in her house.
All right, but it's actually on a national realtor website. Like they drew up the plans to Buffy's house.
Look, Joyce wanted Buffy to lose her virginity from a nice foreign gentleman.
She set it up.
So, John, you have another comment here. Dingoes ate my baby.
So this is Dingoes ate my baby is the band, right?
The band that Oz is in.
Oz's band, yeah. And I just wanted to point out that they are the ultimate Buffy band because we've had this rotating cast of real bands that all feel like, with the exception of Tibo Motto, who is different, but like all the other bands feel like just really generic alt rock bands from the 90s. And then we have Dingoes Eat My Baby, which is literally a made up generic alt rock band from the 90s. And I feel like they're a distillation of.
The 90s.
When you see it like that, it reminds me of the 90s. You never guys ever see Reality Bites, of course. Ethan Hawke's fake band in that movie, which is like, what is it? It's like Stole My Bike or something like that. Someone Stole My Bike.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they do spoken word poetry or something.
They might do one spoken word poetry intro, but that's just the into the song.
Okay. It's been a while since I saw Reality Bites.
I haven't seen Reality Bites since I saw it in your bedroom in 1998 or 7 or whatever.
Hold on, were you a foreign exchange student at the time?
He did borrow Mike's lipstick, but that was a different story.
I just Googled Four-Star Mary is the band that actually sings the Dingoes Ate My Baby song.
Oh.
So there's a real band from the 90s. So, like, it sounds like typical 90s music. That's why Four-Star Mary, we recognize them. Like, I think.
Do they do all the Dingoes Ate My Baby songs or just the one in this episode?
No, all of them. All of them.
Oh, interesting.
And I know they had another hit. I know they've had like actual hits. Four-Star Mary was an actual alt rock band.
It really sounds like a 90s alt rock band.
Oh, yeah.
Four-Star Mary. God.
Yeah, it totally.
You have to have a number in there somewhere.
It's gotta make no sense.
So, John, the next stuff is all yours. You got like four things in a row here.
Oh, do I? Okay. So I just pointed out that, I think I said in the summary, like international costume dance is a really bad idea for high school students.
There's no way of that not being offensive, right?
Yeah, that doesn't work out well.
I wish that was a real
Jewish
dance,
guy
though.
Rocking out.
That was really fun. It was like going to Epcot.
So the thing, and this, we should have put this in. We should have talked about this when we were talking about Xander versus Oz and how they're different. I just feel like, so Oz is the guy in band archetype in like the, if we're going to expand the canon beyond what we see in Breakfast Club. So like guy in band belongs next to that. And being the guy in the band in a high school movie is like being the nerd character, but without the disadvantages. Like,
so it's also an outsider role to be.
Yeah, it's, well, you get to be cool in the outsidery way, but you don't
without have being a jock.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's the role that Oz is occupying, right?
Yeah, this is a '90s character, this alt rocker who's on the outside because of the influx of non-mainstream grunge white artists, right?
Yeah,
because like Elvis Presley, like he's not one of these types. This is a poly rant. This doesn't make any sense. Cool. Moving on.
And then just like, I just wanted to point out how much I love Willow in her Nanook of the North situation when like she like needs to look behind her and she does it without turning her neck because she can't in the outfit. It's just really good physical comedy. I really, really like that.
Yeah, good prop work.
Yeah, good prop work. Very good prop work with the spear.
Yeah. Yeah. And knocking over the cheese.
What is it? Makeup and costume was out of this, was out of sight this episode, man. I feel like this was the most expensive episode of Buffy that I've seen.
They couldn't, they didn't have any money left to spend on like vampire dusting special effects. You know, it's like they had no money left in the budget.
Yeah, no vampires this episode.
They spent although the dust budget on this episode was rather high.
Very end. I'll tell you this. I got the feeling it was better than Raiders. Remember how crazy things at the end of Raiders got, or at the end of Last Crusade?
What? No.
This was pretty good.
Better in what way?
Well, the special effect of the mummy like disintegrating, falling on the floor. It wasn't like the weird plasticky melting. Well, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen Raiders. Last Crusade. I feel like that's a legitimate spoiler alert because we are talking about something that's 19 years old. And
yeah, but if you're listening to a Buffy podcast,
yeah, you're deep in it.
You've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. You need to do your geek shit in order.
Yeah, due diligence. Let's do due diligence
at the beginning. The special. I was actually going to talk a little about the special makeup effects this episode.
Like I was happy. It was like I usually complain a lot about lighting. I usually complain about some other stuff like that, but I was really pleasantly surprised with the mummy disintegration at the very end.
Yeah, it's like, done John Volich, and he's the makeup guy for most of the series, I think. And I was going to talk about him this episode anyway, so I looked him up, and he passed in October. So mm-hmm. he last time I talked about him back in season one, he was still alive. So
whoa,
that's sad. I didn't know what happened because I was going to start. Since I do the drawings and I mostly am drawing his work, I was going to start I looked up to see if he was on Twitter so I could tag him, but he just recently passed. So I just, you know, rest in peace.
No kidding.
Really good artist. He wins an Emmy for Buffy this season, actually. So
what kind of Emmy? A costume Emmy?
Makeup effects Emmy or something for a mid-season episode that we'll get to.
Oh, cool. Up. Yeah, no, I was really impressed with
it. What episode name? Just out of curiosity. You can spoil the name.
I don't remember the name of the episode, but it's the one with the judge.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I have one in here about how I think Xander apparently can love only monsters. That's an interesting theme. I want to make a prediction that Xander will never love a human woman.
And that are we
prediction number two,
like not counting Buffy as a human, or
she's not a human, she's something else, she's a supernaturally powerful lady who can punch through doors and shit. She only looks human. Xander will, when he eventually loses virginity, will not be to a human woman. Yeah, that's it.
All right. No humans for Xander.
No humans for Xander. If he gets physical contact with a human, there's something going wrong. He's under a spell. He has been briefly like transformed in some way. Like he's
the monster.
He's the original monster. It's a mirror universe. It's a twin. Like there's just something wrong. Like he's sick. He's physically ill. Has to kiss a woman in order to do a spell. Like there's something going on that requires him to be with a human woman specifically, or he's powerless. Like, it's not going to happen naturally. Naturally, he'll love a monster.
Is this episode Xander's first kiss? Do you guys know?
Oh.
Doesn't he make out with the teacher for a second and teacher's pet? Or does he, keep on as soon as he drinks?
I don't remember him kissing in that episode.
Oh, God. What did he say? He said something like, so that's a gin and tonic? Or
that's a martini. So that's a martini.
That's a martini.
How do you like your eggs? Scramble.
How do you like your eggs, bro? Over easy.
That guy is such a jerk. Oh,
how do you like your eggs, bro? Make a great t-shirt.
How do you like your eggs, bro? Be a great food cart.
God, that's the first t-shirt of the show. That's the first t-shirt of the podcast, man. John, you got to make that up.
I'll get on that. I can get on that. That's easy.
Get on that. And we'll give away a couple. Yeah, let's give away.
Oh, well, no, we're not giving away.
We're not giving away. Those are expensive.
So for people who don't know, John Landis is an expert t-shirt designer.
Expert, yes.
He's gotten paid for it before.
And there's a number of t-shirts out in the wild that he's responsible for that wouldn't exist otherwise. One of which, I don't want to give it away. John can represent himself, but like there's some pretty incredible ones.
I'm actually representing John right now.
Okay.
And, that's good. Will you be my t-shirt design agent so I can get those sweet $35 a design?
Lose 15%. So.
Yeah. What was the labyrinth-themed t-shirt that was out in the world?
It was a picture of a Skeksi, and it said, "Do you think I'm Skeksi?" Question mark.
I feel like we need to have a Barkley t-shirt.
What would the Barkley t-shirt even be?
Just his face. I would wear that. I would
that. Just, yeah, awesome. Just got to meme it, and it would say, like, get off the holodeck.
Ever say stuff like stay stuff like, guys, I'm worried. I'm just worried about things, guys. Does he ever say stuff? I don't even remember what Barkley says.
You're just making up this dialogue for him.
I'm not going on that transporter.
Yeah, just watch that one.
It should be like Barkley's face, him holding that cat, and if it just saying, I'm not going on that ... And it could just be like, I'm not doing anything, man. I'm worried.
Remember that episode where he gets like super smart and he like part of his brain goes into the Enterprise computer?
Yes. And he doesn't just get smart. He gets like seductive. Like he Cyborg Barkley is able to seduce Counselor Troy almost.
Oh, Barkley.
All right. I've never even seen, I don't think I've seen a Barkley episode of Star Trek. I like how,
there's at least right three.
Up tongue, though. Oh my gosh.
What is it? That's not even from like the original cast. Like, this is a unique next generation character.
Unique next generation character.
Why is
TNG?
Well, of course, there are very few characters that cross the line between original series and next gen because like 60 years have passed. So if you're either very old or you're like a long lived race, like a Vulcan, if you're in both, or there's like a time travel situation, like with Scotty and the transporter buffer in Relics.
Let me ring us back. Does anyone ever use the phrase Megillah before?
Oh yeah.
I was trying to remember, it's like, what type of word is that? But it's like,
well, I know there's the cartoon character Megillah Gorilla.
Yeah.
But no one just says Megillah alone. You say Megillah Gorilla and you're talking a cartoon show.
Really? I think you could just, oh, there's something in Swedish. Ooh. Jag Jord Megillah Ilfoten.
Oh, you just quickly,
what is happening?
Travis is googling things and then talking about what he sees. That's John.
Xander uses the term Megillah in the beginning of the episode.
Does he? Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought we were just like, that's a baby talk podcast. I thought that was
the quote, John, because of course it's on the tip of my tongue, is, are you doing this whole exchange Megillah?
Oh
yeah,
okay, I guess I remember that. Yeah.
Anyways.
Megillah Gorilla.
Sounds like fake bullying by writers in LA trying to figure things out.
The other thing I would say is this episode, the dialogue for Xander feels like it was written by Joss Whedon about Joss when he was a kid. Like, the things Xander says are so typical for like a guy. Like, I'm gonna tell you something that's scary and like, you know, I like you. And to me it's like, he's a lot like, Xander's a better character because he's a lot more like vulnerable and not super creepy. Most of this episode, he's not super creepy, but like when he talks, it's like really smart for a high school kid to say, you know.
It's painful to watch him ask her out. It's just like awful to watch. But I mean, I was probably even worse at asking.
Oh yeah, that's like way smooth compared to high school kids asking people out. That's way more eloquent.
Well, you're not supposed to. You can't do it so formally. Anyway, don't ask people out. Hey, I mean, going out, you know, you and me. You need a moment first. So Empata's like Rogue. This is a stupid observation. Rogue, who's a popular character in the X-Men universe, not from Star Trek. Maybe you've heard of her.
Been a lot there is of a crossover. Me. Comic book.
Who I discovered I have a real life crush on while we were in Orlando.
Yes, yes, we both did. That was wonderful. No, mostly you. That was fantastic. You were like, I think I'm into Rogue.
Wait, what is this story?
Oh, at Universal Studios, X-Men characters like show up and you interact with them, and I like got really flush talking with Rogue, and she's like, "What's your power?" And I was like, I can read your mind."
Wait, you turned into like the lion from Wizard of Oz?
Basically, yeah. And Mike took a bunch of photos of me talking to her that are as awkward to look at as I felt at the moment, where I'm like touching my like I don't know.
Did she ask you your powers, or you asked
her? She asked me my powers. Yeah,
right.
They just turn it on its head over at Universal. Great place. No, I love the character interaction. That's the stuff that's so unexpected and weird, is they have these improv actors dressed as X-Men characters. Now, of course, there is no Star Trek equivalent, unfortunately. There is no Star Trek universe that you can visit, right? Maybe Las Vegas, isn't there a Star Trek room?
There used to be something called the Star Trek Experience in Las Vegas. It's not there anymore. I never went.
Oh, I'm sorry, John.
It's all right. I was not worried.
We could have gone to Quark's Bar for an episode of Buffy Virgin and had a Armin Shimmerham like concurrence. It would have been great.
I guess that's like all these sci-fi shows have to have this like concurrent. Like they all share the same cast, more or less. So I get it. Like they're all connected, basically. Like you don't. It's not far as pretty much of a stretch from Buffy to like probably Charmed and Supernatural and Grimm and all these other supernatural shows. Though Bones,
I'm glad Grimm's getting mentioned. Like Mike only references that because I watch that fanatically, and his wife does as
well. Wife's big fan.
Big fan. That's why she's so great. Well, part of the reason she's so great, I'm sure.
You know what?
That's why I approve of your wife.
I want to give a shout. I did the shout out last time, not last time, but during sometime on the podcast. I don't want us to confuse too much the popularity between Star Trek and Buffy, because when Star Trek was on air, I went back and looked at the Nielsen ratings, and it had the rating of 30, which is insane. So Star Trek was, the Next Generation was hugely popular. So even a minor character, that was TNG. Armin Shimmerham was from Deep Space Nine. But what I'm trying to say is the main characters don't necessarily cross over, but the minor characters, Mike. So I just don't want us to confuse a Buffy, which never had a share of 30.
No. Major characters are typecast and then imprisoned in that character for the rest of their lives. But minor characters can float between shows.
But they're trapped in the sci-fi, fantasy, horror
universe. Right, they're trapped in the science fiction universe, which they can never escape.
Like Summer Glau is a good, person to point to for that, for like, she made her debut in Angel and like is just trapped forever in doing like sci-fi channel shows and stuff. Like, she might be a fine actress, but
she could get out in time she wants.
Do you guys remember that film Stay Tuned with John Ritter?
Yeah.
Right. And like he gets sucked into the cable TV and the kids have to save him, right? Stupid.
Yeah.
But that would be a great premise for this kind of concept where a bit sci-fi actor has their first role, then gets sucked into the sci-fi universe and it's just in show after show and their friends are so thrilled, but they can't escape.
And they just wake up like 30 years later and they're at a convention and like they're signing autographs.
Well, the convention space would be like the lobby area you can get to that's kind of like a safe haven, you know, but it's not that safe, where it's like your only way to be in the real world. And then, you know, when you exit through a door, you're now back on one of these shows again, where you're being tortured, and then you get back anyway. Just an idea.
So Casino Royale.
You can tell me this is meta, but Nathan Fillion, when he was on Castle, Nathan Fillion, Mike, was in Fireflies, the main character, Malcolm Reynolds, Mal is bad. But while on Castle, there was an episode where they went to a Star Trek-like convention. And it's a great episode where he's like on set on like a sci-fi, like Star Trek, like show, and like pretending to nerd out about liking a Star Trek-like show. Anyways,
isn't there also an episode of Castle where he dresses like Mal Reynolds? And
yeah, there's like a lot of really great inside jokes with that. But that's like the closest thing I can come to like almost like in television cinema or in television show, like close parody of itself. But the problem is it was all different networks. That's why so none of it really worked. They weren't that close. But anyways,
I don't know. I feel like I kind of like as the audience... the geek audience expands and there's more geek shows than there used to be. Like there's more of those, like
way more geek shows
references. Like, this is going to be really nerdy on the CW. The actor who played, Superman in Superman Returns, Brandon Ralph or Roaf. I don't know how to spell his name. Plays the Atom now on those shows. And, there's an episode where he meets Supergirl and they make a couple like jokes where he's like, you look exactly like my cousin, or, you know, like just making some vague reference to the fact that he once played Superman, but is now something else.
I can't wait for you need your own CW podcast.
He was in the 2000 later. Brandon Roth was in the Superman Returns 2006 movie. I missed that somehow. I missed. That's the one I missed. I caught the later remake.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill.
So I Henry assume Cables. no one's listening to the podcast Cavill. At this Cavill, point. Right?
John, can I get a sound check on Cavill?
Cavill?
What's up? Is it Cavill? Henry Cavill? He's British. Maybe you'd have some insight into this. No?
I'll Google it. I'll Google how we pronounce it. Keep going.
So we're finished with our observations here, at least the list. Then John has one question here. Brief question.
What are everybody's awkward high school memories from dances?
Oh, man. I have so many awkward memories, John.
I don't have any specific ones, actually. They were just awful. I only went to two of them, I think, all through high school, and they were both off. Three of them. They were all three awful.
I remember going to a dance at UD campus in junior high school where everyone was on the floor in a circle, and they were like, you're like in a somewhat crouched position, and you're supposed to hump in order to move into the circle. So I was behind Nicki Motto for some reason, and it's like, cool, I guess I'm supposed to like not hump, not touch this person, but kind of like hump the air in the direction. I'm like, what the fuck is this otherwise very formal dance that had a dance card? And it was just like, clearly the DJ was on another planet, but like directing the action of kids to do embarrassing shit. And like, anyway, school dances are terrible. And that memory stands out as like, what was something like?
I remember those nightmare. School dances with the dance cards. That was such a weird experience. I have a lot of bad high school prom memories, but I remember the first time I really interacted with Mike and Travis was at my first high school dance, and they kind of harassed me a little.
Yeah, was this the freshman luau? Was that?
Yeah.
That was not a good night.
That's not great. I don't quite exactly remember the circumstances. To be fair, we harassed Mike way worse back in high school.
Yeah, but not at dances.
I just remember you guys grabbed my dance card and were like, who are you dancing with? And like, oh, look, it's so empty. And you're like, oh, you're dancing with her? And I was like, I don't know what's going on. Because I was new and was like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah, we would have been killed quickly in the Buffy universe for our reaction.
I think John's prom story is probably like the most awkward.
Do I have to tell that?
You brought it up.
I did bring it up.
You can save it for Buffy's prom whenever that happens.
Oh, yeah. Why don't we save it for prom? Why don't we?
Yeah, yeah. Let's save prom stories.
Remember our prom stories and save it for prom.
Ugh.
Okay.
So I don't see any other, like, bigger. There is a theme here.
I wrote down a theme in my notebook. I just did it last night, so I didn't have time to.
Okay.
I kind of thought of this episode. I realized this episode, if it has a theme, is sacrifice, because. Mm-hmm. Both the mummy is sacrificed and sacrifices people. Buffy, as usual, has to struggle with like sacrificing her normal life for being a slayer. And Willow actually does like some emotional sacrifice for Xander's happiness this episode.
Oh, that's a good call. I didn't make that connection. That's true.
The only person who doesn't experience really the like emotional sacrifices is Xander, who's kind of oblivious to Willow's state and like just blunders through the episode, but isn't like a terrible guy in this episode and actually fights okay. He fights the bodyguard twice.
That bodyguard is a mess.
Yeah, everybody fights the bodyguard. Like, he's a total waste, Wade. And the fact that Xander is like getting good at fighting but clearly not training, but I guess he's in situations where he has to fight so frequently that like I guess he can just like has the skill, because like they say that your muscle diminishes after 10 days of inactivity. So it's like, I mean, if it's on a weekly cadence, he's getting in fights. I guess yeah. He's tough.
But he should totally do some regular training. I looked up the bodyguard because he looked familiar to me. The actor's name is Gil Birmingham. And he was in Hell or High Water this year. He's Jeff Bridges' partner.
Oh, the Indian partner?
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
Yeah,
I didn't realize totally that there was a connection to Buffy.
There you go.
Like, that's how the world works. You're finally understanding.
And he's done a lot of stuff. He looks like he's had a really long career. He's in all of the Twilight movies, and he's probably in Charmed and stuff, but he's in some good movies, like Hell or High Water.
Are we going to talk about Araceli now?
Who's Araceli?
Araceli is Ampata. She's the actress.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm not on a first name basis.
Yeah. Araceli was obviously not South American. She's Latina, Mexican American. Anyway, she's apparently she lives in Houston or Texas, and she's like the spokeswoman for like a car dealership there. So she's in print ads currently.
Does she dress up as a mummy girl?
I don't know. That's a great question. I haven't seen any of the print ads. I'm just going to look them up now. Yeah, those are some print ads. Wow. Don't look those up. Don't look up these print ads at work, people. No. No, that's not good.
I feel like the range of Buffy merchandise that you could get into, Travis, it's pretty varied. It's really like, what can actors do?
She was in Dusk Till Dawn. This makes a lot of sense.
Oh.
So she's probably naked in that movie.
Something like that.
There's nudity in that movie for sure. So themes do stuff.
But Salma Hayek isn't nude in that movie.
No, she's a named, right? It's like if you're named, you can be get away with it.
Yeah, that's true. She's Santa Monica, Santa something, Pandemonium. So do you want to do
kill count?
Let's wrap it up. Do we ask this question in Pod and Buffy as different ways to handle destiny?
Well, I mean, I think that's what Dennis is basically talking about, this whole idea of sacrifice and Buffy is really put upon by the whole Slayer thing, and her way of handling it has so far has been, you know, with certain struggles, but basically to accept her role and try to customize it to fit her life. Whereas Ampata has basically given a big old middle finger to the society that told her that she was destined to do this thing. I really sort of like admire Ampata's move to some extent, except for that, you know, she's murdering people.
I remember when watching this, it really felt like Ampata was like totally, yeah, alt universe Buffy, you know, instead of the Watcher, she had the bodyguard or whatever mm-hmm. who she was going against, who was trying to keep her on track for her destiny. Totally. Exactly what you're saying.
I think that's what the comparison is supposed to be. I don't know. I favorably look at Ampata this episode. I don't think Ampata is really that bad of a character or an evil character. She's dealing with issues the only way that she knew how when she was alive.
Right.
And that was 500 years ago. And I mean, definitely the series could have made like a better distinction. She could have killed criminals or, you know, rapists or, this will make more sense later. I mean, she could have killed the dregs of society, to keep her immortality. And I'm not entirely sure, like within the context of the show, if that would have been so bad. She's a little bit of a tragic figure that during the most of the episode, Buffy doesn't sympathize with. But then in the last 2 minutes, Buffy kind of starts to sympathize with Ampata only after she's re-mummified and destroyed. It's a little bit
right.
weird.
A little bit late.
Sympathize with her in the last minute when they spent the whole time hunting the mummy. But and even the last episode, the last scene with her fighting, she wasn't very sympathetic. And
well, I mean, she got thrown into a sarcophagus, which...
Yeah,
is one of her big fears is to be trapped.
That's true. If you're on Pada and your culture has basically told you this, like, you know, weird, you know,
we're gonna kill you,
cartoon version of Incan culture has told you that, like, you know, you need to die, you need to be sacrificed for really vague reasons, as far as we know, right? Can you really blame her for just being like, well, if you're all going to murder me, I'll just murder everybody. Yeah. Like, I mean, it seems, especially if that's what it takes to keep you alive. I mean, it seems.
That's already 1,000 times more interesting than Ampata really is, John. That ups, like if they include something like that, like there's no backstory for the character beyond just like maybe there's a couple sentences about her story and like, you know, Giles kind of reaching for what, you know, this plate might mean.
Right.
Which, but it would definitely, there's like, they could do it a lot more interesting stuff. Like, it's funny, like even in the episode of Buffy where they, what's the one where they go to the internet, dude, like they scan in the book and the
iRobot Eugene,
right? Even that
the like, best has episode a, from season one.
Amazing. Yeah.
So even in iRobot Eugene, like they have like a little bit of backstory about it. And like, they don't have that for Ampata. Yeah. I mean, they already spent a ton of money, I guess, getting everybody in this museum. So I guess, you know, can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, Ampata seems like I wish she was in more episodes. I don't think she's really that bad of a character, like evil. But
yeah, I don't know why she disintegrated either. That was unclear. It seemed like she would just go to the mummy state that she was in before.
Well, they ripped off her arms and then she fell on the floor.
Yeah, they don't establish enough like of the ticking clock or something to make it.
Ooh, is it a little bit like
the show is, you know, just vague about monsters.
Like she turned into a pumpkin. What's that? What's that fable?
Cinderella.
Cinderella. She's a little like Mommy Cinderella.
She maybe needs that plate a little bit more than we know. That what I have to guess is, was that a seal? Is that what that plate is?
It's yeah. a seal. It's a kind it's of an seal. Extremely flimsy seal to put to keep a dead like evil monster behind. I feel like if I had a deadly monster, I would reinforce the seal, is all I'm saying.
It's right. Really cool. It's like
carve it out of brick or something.
Something.
It is kind of fun. It's just like shitty magic, though. It's like, oh, there's a vampire, quick. And you like write something on a plate and throw it at him, and they're like, ooh.
Well, yeah, well, like the Chinese vampires yeah. with the signs yeah. on their head.
Yeah.
What?
It's right. The whole hopping Chinese vampires in kung fu movies. Sorry.
Oh.
We don't need another digression.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I was going to say that.
Mr. Vampire. Watch Mr. Vampire.
All right.
So I don't have any new predictions after this. Can we move on to the kill count?
You did list some predictions that should be taken down. Just
yeah, there. So just let's just check predictions really quick. Mike predicts that at some point there will be a theme park episode. I have that.
Okay, great.
Mike predicts that when Xander finds out that Oz likes Willow, he will in turn become interested in Willow.
Oh, but he's going to lose the Willow war. He's not interested in being with Willow. He just wants to be possessive of her.
Right.
And that he'll never have sex with a human, right?
He will not lose his virginity to a human. Oh, no. He'll never have sex with a human. No, only monsters. Yeah, totally.
Okay. So what I have is Xander will never love a human woman. Do I need to make a
No. Okay. There's a lot of little details to this prediction, as we know.
Right. So how can I put this down succinctly?
I think it's just the sex thing. Mike's just really focused on the sex thing.
Yeah. Xander will get horny after all kinds of women, all women, human or monster, but he will lose his virginity to a monster woman, and whatever long-term relationship he develops, if he develops it, will be with a monster woman. And I will probably have to get into a lot of semantic arguments over monster woman because the show is very special about what it considers monsters and not. Buffy, I consider a monster in this case. So if there's another supernatural lady who's tough or whatever that Xander can get be involved with, like that's the monster woman, okay? I don't mean like another high school student. I mean like from another planet or with crazy Buffy powers or like a vampire hunter. You know, like that shit.
Yeah, you're just talking about like nothing, no normal humans. Nobody in the realm of like normal humanity.
Yes, a mutant. He will love a mutant.
Yeah, I think that's good. I like that prediction.
Okay, I think I got those two down. And we're sort of creating, you know, who Xander has sex with and who Xander has longer term relationships with.
This show is very interested in who Xander has sex with. It's very into it. I've been set up to believe he's going to have sex so many times.
Yep. So, and the only thing, the other thing to cover with predictions is that this episode did not confirm or deny any of your prior predictions. So your score remains the same.
Score.
Yes, your score. But you did predict that you already did predict that Xander would have sex with a monster, but unless there's some real off-screen shenanigans in this episode, that didn't happen. He didn't. No. He kissed a monster, but he didn't have sex with a monster. So that's predictions. Nothing new to report.
Good stuff. All right. The kill count is three humans and one mummy.
That sounds like a really funny movie. Three humans, a mummy.
Or band.
Mummy and the Humans.
Three Humans and a Mummy is a really adorable 80s sitcom that nobody remembers that well. It was a
rip on Paul the Reiser.
Family. Yeah, Paul Reiser was the mummy. And it had some legs, you know. But it needed a lot of work.
Yeah. It was just too much of it took place in the one scene, in the
like
apartment.
It's like an Alf clone, except it's an Alf, it's a mummy.
So one of the guys, he's an archaeologist, right? And he's the guy that brought the mummy home. Little did he know, that mummy loves coffee.
And cats.
And cats. That's a good Egypt joke. Love it. And then...
And an elf joke.
Oh, gosh, you're right.
Yeah, it's a two for one. I did good.
So the mummy show is just the elf show? It's just elf, basically? Mummy wisecracks?
I think it should be a little more Friends, where it's like about these roommates who are like
trying to get laid
and stuff, but they're always being interfered.
Step by Step in Elf or Family Matters in Elf?
Yeah, Family Matters. I say wonder. Family Matters and Friends.
I feel like the joke they make every episode is the guy, one guy's like going out, like he's going to go get laid, and the mummy's like, don't forget to wrap it up.
Ouch. That would have been really important in the 1980s, too.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, HIV is real.
AIDS is real, yeah.
Right, they'd have the AIDS is real episode of three guys and a mummy.
That has to get cut. That is not cut. That is not right.
No, that's not okay.
You have to cut that.
You guys want recommendations?
Please. Brandon Fraser's The Mummy.
No, I didn't recommend that. If you want a modern mummy movie, I recommend The Adventures of Adele Blanc-Sig, which is a Luc Besson film from like 2010, maybe. It's based on a comic by Jacques Tardy. It's funny. It's weird. It's got mummies in it. But it's also got other stuff. It's got like a pterodactyl. And the comic is kind of this thing where like... the character can kind of go on a bunch of different weird adventures. And it's all kind of early 20th century France. And then the movie is kind of an adaptation of like three different stories. And if you want like South American monsters, I recommend Kaltiki, the Immortal Monster by Mario Bava, which is not Incan, it's Mayan, but it's like basically kind of like a Lovecraftian monster. And the movie that's like most similar in terms of like how the mummy is dealt with, even though it's not a mummy, is Black Sunday. I thought kind of like the way the corpse looked at the beginning and the way it like has to absorb other people's energy to become young again. Most like Black Sunday, which is like an excellent movie. I know a couple other people have seen it who are on this podcast. It's actually probably one of my favorite horror movies. So,
Dennis, can we add a page to the Buffy Virgin site that for recommendations, just list by episode recommendations, something like the spreadsheet that John's put together?
Yeah, you want to do that?
Yeah, that'd be really cool because I feel like I want to see these movies and we don't write them down in any meaningful way beyond you sharing the episode.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just scroll the end of the episode, pull them out, be cool. Cool. So the last section here is state of the podcast. So how are things going? We're cool with doing this Buffy podcast. We're all having a great time. But what if we did some other podcast?
I'd be up for doing other podcasts, but I don't think we should stop doing the Buffy podcast. I think it's got legs.
It knows like how to use them.
It knows how to use them. I think we could take a break from it. But I don't think we should try to do... If we try to do other podcasts, it should be with a different name and stuff.
Oh, totally. I just don't... I mean, this podcast has no end, which is fine. I like hanging out. But it clearly has... Like, it's never going to end. Like, we're going to be watching Buffy for, I think, another 5 or 6 years before...
Is that including Angel or not?
We're not doing Angel.
Yeah, right. Angel. Right, and there's no binges, right? It's week to week.
What if instead of doing a full Angel podcast, we just have one person watch Angel and do like a comment on it in an episode, and maybe say like if it's connected this week or not to Buffy. So
we got 6 seasons basically left to do. There's 24 episodes in a season.
Wow! So the first season is like you get off easy.
If we do 52 episodes a year, where we don't take any breaks or holidays, we can do it and we can finish in about 3 years.
But we are going to take breaks. We're going to miss some Sundays.
Yeah, yeah,
probably more like 4 years.
I don't know. I mean, I guess more podcasts would be fun, but I don't have that much more time to...
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think that what we should
do... I don't have any more extra time to do more podcasts, I guess.
No, I'm not saying we do another
go ahead. Podcast on the same week or something.
A good break time, like maybe between seasons or maybe at the halfway point in a season. Just switch to something else for a time and then switch back.
I feel powerless on a roller coaster that I can't control. And, you know, I don't mind it terribly, but I'm not... It's just a little bit hard, and I don't want to get really resentful, and I would like to be able to have some kind of break here.
Yeah.
Like, this is fun, and I'm enjoying it to some extent. I enjoy it, but, like, this last episode was kind of like a frivolous Buffy episode, and I'm like, fuck, this could be in season one. Like, I don't feel like this show is going anywhere. If it's really – I'm sure the show picks up, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, heck yeah, but, like, totally not there yet, and just, like – feeling like I'm losing my mind a little bit.
What if we...
And the amount of... This podcast does take up a lot of, like, mental energy, right? Like,
well, I'm spending 2 hours thinking about something I don't care about. Ultimately, but I have to care about, right? Like,
yeah, there's a gun to your head, yeah.
I would like to love you guys in a different way. All right, I'm going to hit the stop recording button. All right, thanks for watching. Anyway.